The following segment contains graphic depictions of suicide and may not be suitable for all audiences.
Welcome to Bipolar Vortex, Tales from the Tunnel. I'm your host, Kelly Ankers. Edward Stinson Dekoven Root, 1962 to 2018. I had a heartbreaking loss recently when a friend called me to let me know that Edward was dead. Edward was my boyfriend in high school, and for a few years after, he was 6'3", 220 pounds. Every time he would come over, my mom would say, "God, that man is beautiful." And when I told her he died, first thing she said was, "Lord, he was good looking." He was a seriously talented drummer in a rock band who once played the entirety of Moby Dick with water glasses and spoons. He would do standing backflips for no reason and was often seen riding his skateboard in a handstand down crazy steep hills. He rode a unicycle, juggled, swam competitively, played tennis competitively, and could learn a new instrument in hours. Memories of him have been overflowing and even seeping into my dreams. Our relationship had more than a little Sid and Nancy to it. We were in mad love, we were crazy happy, we were wild, we were destructive, we fought, and we had tons of fun. He was a couple of years older than me, and before I'd ever spoken to him, I saw him outside on a college campus near where I lived. He was making out with the senior class president, a strong, outspoken woman with long, thick black hair. They were rolling down a hill, locked together like a pretzel, kissing, and I was shocked at the passion being displayed out in the open with no concern of how it looked to others. This was the opposite of me, and I watched them and I was envious of all that raw animalism. When he turned his attention to me, it was like a tsunami. Some things I remember. He taught me to appreciate high-quality pot and gave me lessons on the quality of a good bud in its shape, color, and smell. He had a setup that looked like a jeweler's to see that imperfections are perfections of Jamaican bud. A bright light, a magnifying mirror, a little clamp to hold it still while he was examining. We did every drug we could get our hands on, drank, and made a mess of things. Because of his looks, talent, and bigger-than-life self, he had no problem attracting women. He had a steady stream, and I don't think he turned too many of them away. He was not faithful, and that was a source of endless fights and drama, but I don't look back and feel angry about that at all. He had the life force of 20 megatons contained in one body, and his wild impulsivity simply could not control itself in any area, not just sex. And because we were both bipolar and unmedicated, there were big fights. And even though he was three times my size, I had to be pulled off of him on more than one occasion. One night, he was walking home from my house, and a group of dangerous-looking teenagers started circling him. He started spinning around and doing high kicks and talking gibberish. They just slowly backed up and ran away. So much of his life, he was walking the tightrope. On one side, a charismatic, exciting, unpredictable ball of energy. The other side, not that different. An often indistinguishable line between pure joy and delirium. One afternoon in the middle of a dripping hot Raleigh day, he was cleaning out my car. He was in the driveway of his parents' house and on his knees, throwing McDonald's bags and cigarette butts over his shoulder. He was screaming, "Cars can't look like this," and taking off articles of clothing as he cleaned because he was so hot and so agitated. I begged him to stop. I promised I would clean the car. It would not happen again, but he was in full mania and soon he had no clothes on. The front half of his body was in the back seat of the car. His bare ass was shining in the brutal sun. He was screaming and I didn't know what was happening. I'd never seen it that bad. I didn't know what was happening, but somebody heard it and called someone and an ambulance showed up. The two poor souls that had been dispatched had no choice but to chase him around the front yard, and he ran around like a wild animal to get away. Finally, one of them tackled him. The other one gave him a shot in the butt to calm the beast. He had to go to a psychiatric hospital, and I'm sure they put him on medication, and I'm also sure he never took it. Edward came from a very distinguished old Raleigh family, and the elementary school around the corner was named after his grandfather. His dad, Albert Root, was an eccentric who had his own ragtime band and played all over the city. Ed played with them mainly because he got paid, and he would usually drop acid before each gig. I adored his dad, and his dad adored me, and I have great memories of hanging around their house and talking to him for hours. I think of them as the Grey Gardens of Raleigh. They had the moneyed old Raleigh credentials, but had no interest or ability to keep up with the behaviors expected of that status. We broke up in a parking lot on Hillsborough Street in 1984 after I caught him kissing a girl named Bambi. He tried to get back with me a few times, one time writing my mom a letter while I was away in college that included a full illustration of a farm and cows in a pasture. But my heart had been broken one too many times, and I just couldn't do it again. I came back to visit Raleigh in 1996 with my six-month-old son. I sat outside at Sadlacks and soaked up the company of my old crew. Edward comes walking up from around the corner and gives me the biggest, sweetest, most genuine smile and looks with pure wonder at my son, Max. He comes over and sits next to us and holds my baby and says over and over again how beautiful he is. Ed is the big, beautiful teddy bear I remember, and it is so good to see him. When Tim called me to tell me that Edward had died, they thought it might have been a murder. Police taped off his house and they were stationed there around the clock for 48 hours. The pictures made the news and there was a lot of speculation that there was foul play, but suddenly it all went away and the family said he died of natural causes. I said to Tim, well, people must not die regularly in Raleigh if all that goes down for natural causes, but no one seemed to question it. I did. My sister and I were both infuriated as the days went by, and there was nothing but a short, generic obituary that didn't mention a memorial or services. We both wrote in the guest book and asked to be informed of services because we wanted to fly in from Chicago to be there. My stepdad still lives in Raleigh, and he called me one night and asked me where I was. I was driving, and he told me to pull over because it wasn't going to be easy to hear what he had to say. On Facebook, a lawyer he knew had mentioned Edward's passing. My stepdad ran into him walking down the street in Raleigh, and he mentioned the post about Edward. He said his daughter had dated him in the 80s and how upset we all were. The lawyer had a personal connection to Edward and knew a lot about the situation, and he told my stepdad everything. So here goes. Ed's dad had passed a few years before, and the estate had been in probate. The money was in the final stages before distribution, and a back injury landed Edward in the hospital in serious condition. He was a painter who specialized in restoring historical buildings. His doctor told him he had to take a couple of months off for his back wouldn't heal and he'd be in permanent pain. He told the doctor he was self-employed and earned his livelihood paycheck to paycheck and couldn't afford to take the time off. His doctor told him he had to do it. So Ed had no other choice and went to his older sister and asked if he could borrow $4,000 against the money he was going to be getting in a few months. The lawyer said there was no problem with that as long as the amount borrowed didn't exceed the amount he was due. His sister said no. Ed killed himself within 2 weeks. slit his wrist, and bled out alone with his cat. And I know it was slitting his wrist and bleeding out because the lawyer had a copy of the coroner's report, and my stepdad saw it with his own eyes. And the reason the police had been there so long is apparently there was blood everywhere and they wanted to make sure it wasn't a cover-up of a crime scene. Suicide is always shocking, but in this case, I know why anyone who knew Ed would have a hard time believing he took his own life. He seemed unkillable, an indestructible life force. I would bet that that blood whipped around the room a few times, traveled back into his womb, and had to be pushed out again before settling outside of his body. Ed's parents are gone, and I know damn well they would have wanted a funeral for Edward, complete with a ragtime band. And so many people would have been there. So, big sister, you took that away from him. But here's what you don't get to do. He did not die of natural causes. Suicide should not be covered up to suit appearances. Edward killed himself, and he was alone with his cat. That's how he died. And you couldn't be bothered to give him a meaningful goodbye. But his friends created a webpage for him, and his friends got together and wrote a proper obituary, and his friends put together a musical tribute at his favorite bar. And this friend is telling the world the truth. Rest in peace. Raise hell, Edward, wherever you are. I'll keep doing it here.